there. This is the A Lot To Say podcast, a conversation-based project focused on unconventional career paths and the projects that consume us. I'm your host, Gary Williams, or Gaz, as many call me. And A Lot To Say is part of the Alt Projects family of content, obsessing about the overlap between creativity, technology, and culture. I'm fortunate to spend my days working alongside technologists, artists, researchers, and people who just generally give a damn about the world we live in. And I'm very lucky to be able to hear of some incredible career journeys over that time from some really inspiring people. So I am particularly energized by the projects that I hear people are experimenting and tinkering on along the way. And I thought, you know what, it's time to put these stories out there with the A Lot To Say podcast project. I can't wait for you to hopefully discover some new and lesser known stories about the things people get wrapped up in and what led them to this point. This is A Lot To Say. Well, welcome to episode 13 of A Lot To Say with Lizzie Kane. Who is Lizzie? Well, apart from being an absolute certified legend, she's a video games producer and was recently recognized by Forbes in their 30 Under 30 games list in 2017. It's very cool. In 2014, Lizzie joined forces with four other digital professionals to co-found Girl Geek Academy with their mission to teach 1 million women to get into tech and launch their own startup. So they do a large amount of engagement activities, events and hackathons and whatnot with different focus areas for women of all ages and in particular young women. She works at games development studio League of Geeks, and her role is overseeing their releases internationally across Steam, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One. And she's a role model for women working in the gaming industry. We chat about her path relocating from Brisbane and finding her way to Melbourne and becoming so heavily involved within the video games industry. So how do I know Lizzie? Look, when I changed careers and entered into the startup and tech world after a fairly long corporate-ish career, Lizzie was one of the first I got to know, care of a mutual acquaintance, Tammy Patel, who's one of the co-founders on Girl Geek Academy. I always loved what Girl Geek did or does, and it's been great to have been involved in a tiny capacity with them and by extension Lizzie over the years. She delivered a fantastic talk at Creative Mornings Melbourne a little while ago, which I've been involved with, and you can see that online. I was pretty rapt to see her recognised and tapped on the shoulder to participate in the Creative Vic Advisory Group for Creative State alongside some other industry, you know, heavy hitters. So in this chat, what do we explore? We get into the career journey in this one. Video games, of course, and music, pathways into tech careers and more. She's honestly just such an easy person to talk to, and it's always a really great time catching up with her. So I won't labor the point any longer. This is A Lot To Say, episode 13, a very auspicious episode number, may I say, with Lizzie Kane. Thanks for joining. All right. Welcome to the A Lot To Say podcast, Lizzie Kane. How's it going?
I'm good. Good. Thank you for having me. I'm very good. Nice and toasty inside.
Yeah, nice and toasty. Great. Myself too. I want to thank you very much for being here. I mean, we'll dip into, I guess, you know, my involvement with Girl Geek Academy over the years, which was basically culminated in, I guess, my entry into the startup tech creative space. Nicely, but before getting into that, let's talk about what you're doing now, and then I guess how you got there. So you're currently a co-founder at Girl Geek Academy, and then also a lead producer at League of Geeks. Mm-hmm. So tell us what's a day in the life at the moment.
Oh, a day in the life. So it depends on day to day. That's why I'm able to chat with you today. We have at League of Geeks, we have Tuesdays and Thursdays are what we call our focus days. So these are the days that we can really do our deep work and actually have no meetings and make sure that we're able to focus really heavily on some of those more complicated tasks. So for me as a lead producer, what my role really entails is looking after, we have two producers on our team, as well as two QA. So making sure firstly and foremost that they're happy and healthy and they have everything that they need. But overall, outside of that, I'm also an executive producer on a project that we're working on at the moment. So I'm really in charge of the budgets and overall timelines for delivering the project that we're working on. Games take, surprisingly for some, a long time to make sometimes. And this particular project's a bit of a doozy. So really making sure that everyone's got what they need. So I can be in anything from, you know, looking after meetings, making sure meetings are running on time and that notes are being taken, to figuring out and untangling complicated like roadblocks that are coming up. So someone needs work that needs to be finished in order to start their own work, you know, making sure that that's all happening smoothly, looking at budgets, looking at software, like anything and everything to do with making sure a game is being done in the right order and in the right way. So it's a very, very complicated job at times, but I absolutely love problem solving. So it's exciting for me to be able to do that stuff every day. And then usually in the evening, that's when I jump over to my Girl Geek world. So usually I just check what's going on our Slack and seeing what the team have been up for today. I'm definitely more of an advisor in that role. So I definitely act as a industry representative and keep my finger on the pulse in my industry, and then come back to the team and be like, this is kind of going on at the moment. Maybe we should address this, or just see what the team's up to at the time. So that's Sarah and our Girl Geek team.
Right. So look, we're going to dive into both both League of Geeks and Girl Geek Academy. I mean, the focus today is unconventional career paths and then also projects. So, and I know that, look, we'll address the unconventional career paths part in a couple of ways. One is obviously the way you found your way into that world. Another is how people do get into that world themselves as well. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, the projects aspect, which, you know, as you've detailed, is a constant factor in both of the both of your separate worlds, but somehow intertwined. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about what Girl Geek Academy predominantly does, and how long it's been in operation for.
So we've been in operation since 2014, and basically we run our business model runs in a few different ways. So firstly, we have some really great capstone events. So most people know us for SheHacks, which is our hackathon that we run once a year, where you break up into hackers, hipsters and hustlers and join teams to create startups, apps, websites based around, generally we have some kind of theme. And so it helps women meet other women and create teams and hopefully form startups. But that outside of that, we have a bunch of different initiatives that we work on depending on what's happening in that year, alongside with working with different organizations. So one of our biggest recent of things that we've done, our projects, was publishing a book series with Penguin. So we did a 4-part book series, and that was obviously something that is really, really important as part of our project, because we're not just about, you know, creating startups. We're about looking at changing the whole industry and all of society. So looking at from ground up. So these books were aimed at young girls. So it was written by Alex Miles. It was a great project to work on with Penguin. So it varies from year to year. For myself, I specialize obviously in the games industry. So we run, once again, a variety of different events and initiatives encouraging women to get into games and to continue their careers into games as well. So not just actually getting into it, but actually having a sustainable and long-term career. So last year, we did run an amazing 6-month event with Film Victoria around building your career. So it was a career incubator specifically for women in their early careers in games. So teaching them things that you may not learn at university, you probably won't learn from your employer. So things like tax, how to do your tax, how to set up your own BAS and all that kind of stuff. So every month we do running different events in person, as well as giving them mentoring with international and local mentors. So we run like just a myriad of different things reacting to what our industry is doing. And that's obviously for the games industry, it was that early career. That was a big project that we wanted to focus on. But it's something that we do reflect on at the end of every year and figure out what's going to be important for the following year.
Yeah, and I have noticed that. I mean, obviously, you've addressed it earlier, but you run these numerous programs. I mean, She Hacks, mm-hmm. She Makes Games, etc. Mm-hmm. But you're not necessarily bound by, I guess, a rigid rhythm of delivering them in one location and at one set point of the mm-hmm. like at one set yeah. time period of the year. Mm-hmm. So you are flexible. You do change things around, and also noticed quite a bit of regional engagement work that you've been doing in recent years as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. So going out to places like Warrnambool and Ballarat and throughout Victoria, because it's obviously it's not just Melbourne-centric. We can often be just always pivot towards doing something in Melbourne because that's where we're based, but we need to remember the regions. And that's why working with partners like, you know, working with like Creative Victoria and also the partners out in Ballarat. So Ballarat has a great startup scene. So that's why we ended up going out there. So yeah, it just depends on what the, what's going on in the industries and what's going on in our regions at the, that particular point in time. And because we are an agile team, we're a small team, we definitely, we can pivot quite easily. And that's something that we often do. So another thing that we're working on at the moment actually is we've been setting up a piloting a forum for girls in high school and primary school. So going old school. So going back to the days of when you, you probably were part of online forums. Yeah, no, online forums. Like I never had, you know, you didn't get chat rooms till a little bit like later on, but things like setting up online forums where kids can go and safely interact online and find other friends and talk about topics that, for example, lots of chat about Animal Crossing at the moment, obviously, like girls love talking about that. But having something that's outside of their school friends, meeting new people that also like, you know, coding and playing games and everything, just having a safe space for those girls is something we're testing at the moment because we definitely see a lack of that space. Like back in the day of like, you know, Neopets and all that kind of stuff, there's kind of like not really a safe space outside of traditional social media for girls to gather and, you know, hang out and just have fun and geek out about things that they enjoy.
Yeah, absolutely. So on that, I mean, you've addressed, I guess, engaging with, you know, young girls and then obviously young women or across you know, different sort of age ranges. What's the sentiment conveyed to yourselves as the, I guess, the creator of these engagement experiences, whether in person, at the moment that that's not especially relevant, but it's been taken out of our hands a little bit. But obviously now we have these online engagement things. And just like you mentioned around, you know, creating a safe space. So how to say, how's the difference between what young girls would convey to you as opposed to people you're engaging and finding that suddenly find, I guess, a safe space to find peers, a community, a group of people that they connect with immediately?
That's the thing with the young I feel very old saying the young kids these days, but with young girls, you have to remember a lot of the time, and we've had this, the reason why we've done this is, as well is because when we run events like Miss Makes Code, it's quite similar. They're not coming in with a group of friends. They're coming in on their own. So they're coming to our events and engaging in events on their own. They may have a parent that's quite supportive, but they may not have any friends at their school that also enjoys geeky things, and that immediately makes it feel negative. It immediately makes them feel, you know, oh, maybe I'm a dork, maybe this isn't cool, maybe I shouldn't do it. So that's, it's all part of that, you know, giving them the confidence to keep investigating and keep always looking into it, because this all loops back to the whole idea of obviously representation and not being able to see yourself in these career paths. And for the younger audience, it's definitely just an instant excitement to be able to talk to somebody else that also likes the same things that they, because at the end of the day, that's what we want. You know, you want to have a community that can reflect what you enjoy. And some of these kids don't have that in their schools. They may be the only one that plays games, because like we've had, for example, obviously kids of my friends where they're game developers and their parents do it. So they think it's really cool, but then they go to school and everyone's like, that's, you know, why are you talking about video games? You're a girl. So it's one of those things, giving them that space to actually commune. And actually, it's not that dissimilar to adults, because when we started She Hacks, a big reason why it was formed was because Tammy, one of our co-founders, was like, oh, I don't want to go to these events where there's I'm the only woman doing being part of this hackathon. I actually want to make a hackathon with my friends and with my peers and people that I enjoy hanging out with a bit more. So it was something that actually spawned from that, and having that same, you know, the same group. And women that come to our hackathons, they may be the only woman on their dev team or something like that, but so they don't have an opportunity to network. So it's quite similar, funnily enough. We just want to, you know, we just want to find our people and find our tribes. And I think that's, it's not very dissimilar to being a kid growing up and feeling kind of, you know, out of it. And that sucks. It's the worst feeling. So try to
Yeah, certainly. I think, I mean, you know, a few different contexts. I mean, you know, I have a 5-year-old daughter. I'm trying to envision, you know, the ways I, you know, have her, like, I guess, enhance her interest in technology at future stages. And I mean, that's happening right now. She starts to get a bit more curious. But also, in another parallel, you mentioned Tammy before. I mean, I was not working within the startup and tech space, but we had a shared connection within the, I guess, the punk hardcore metal scene within Melbourne. And so just through being friends on social media, I actually got this really interesting insight into how that ecosystem operated a little bit. So whilst she was advocating for the things that you just spoke about and was basically developing these new initiatives with yourself, Sarah, and the others involved in Girl Geek, I too got a bit of benefit in getting a peek into that world by actioning hackathons, creating these events, and a little more than just your sort of cliche pizza and beer nights, I guess. Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
so I found it deeply a benefit as well.
She brings people together, Tammy. She's very, very, very good at like bringing people together. That's for sure.
Well, as you do, and on you. So bringing people together. So you talked a little bit about the League of Geeks role, and I mean, some people would tag it as a multi-potentialite, which is, you know, doing many things and wearing many hats, and you know, it's all the essential things in keeping the wheels turning.
Yes.
But how did you find your way to games, and well, maybe we'll start with how did you find your way to Melbourne?
Oh, that's a long story. So that's why we're here, right?
That's right.
I definitely was a quote unquote late bloomer. There's people that you'll talk to, you know, they figured out they wanted to be in games when they were like 5 years old. They were like, I played a game and I wanted to make games. That's definitely not me. It was something that was, that's why obviously Girl Geek is so important to me, is because I never felt like this was actually an option to very, very late in my life. Well, quote unquote late. It was my early 20s, so I'm sure that's still not very late. But I through high school and through just leaving high school, I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. I loved music and I played music. I loved technology. So always in high school was always building websites. I taught myself all that kind of things. I thought it was really interesting, loved, you know, everything to do with the internet, thought it was very fascinating, and always thought technology would be something that I wanted to work in. But didn't really know how to put those things together. And growing up, I'm actually from Brisbane. Growing up in Brisbane, it was one of those things too, I was a bit clueless to figure out what I wanted to do, because all around me there's things like, you know, you go and get a job in a bank, or you go get a job as a lawyer, and that's kind of what you do. You get married and you have kids. It's kind of the life that seemed to be presented to me, but that didn't really sit with me. I didn't really feel like that was something that would make me happy. So I did end up going and working at a bank. After high school, I just had no idea. I didn't want to go to uni yet. I didn't know what I wanted to do. So I ended up working at Suncorp by the end of it, I was working there for 8 years in total. But during that time, because I had obviously money, money's great to have when you're out of high school and moving out of home for the first time, I started to think about what I wanted to actually study. And I ended up studying a degree in arts. So I was doing a film, music, television degree. So like kind of like a creative degree. And I was like, this is what I want to do for the rest of my life. I love film. I love TV. I love being creative. And I did that for about a year. And that was at UQ. And I just didn't click with me, because it still had something missing. And that part was the technology element of it. It was all very creative. It was purely creative. And that to me wasn't something that I could necessarily see myself doing for the rest of my life. I played in bands. So I've played in bands for a very long time and still played music and still enjoyed, you know, we traveled around Australia and played in terrible pubs all over the cities. But it wasn't something that I could see myself making a career or any money out of. Music is a very tough industry to crack into, obviously.
Sure is.
So I went back to the drawing board. I dropped out of uni, was like, this isn't for me. Kept working in my job at Suncorp, which is great. I did learn a lot of life skills, and I think that 8 years taught me just as much as probably my final university degree. So I went back to the drawing board, worked for a couple more years, and was still really not convinced that this was the life for me. I didn't want to do that forever. So I went back to look at what was available at university. And by that time, QUT had their second or third year of their games degree. So they have a game design course at QUT. And I saw that, and until that moment, so that would have been early 20s, until that moment, I had no idea video games were made by people in Australia, made by people like me at all. That was something that I didn't even think about. It was just so foreign to me. Funny blockbuster movies, I was like, oh, maybe I could make a big movie, but I can't make a video game. It was something that was so like not served to me at that time.
And sorry, I cut you off, but no, were you an avid gamer at that time?
Yeah, ever since I was like a kid, I'd always played video games. I'd always played, like, I met one of my best friends through playing Age of Empires online in high school. Like, absolutely loved them, but it was just something I never thought about. Like, it was just so not human to me at that time. It was something that I never really understood. It's funny, I bought like guitar magazines and I'd buy like music magazines, but I never thought to buy, actually I did buy PlayStation magazines when I was a kid, but I still didn't really put the two and two together. I was like, oh, games are maybe made in America. That's probably what I thought of at that time. And then
I mean, it's nice to understand that your world that you exist in is not quite as small as what you realize. But obviously to unearth what's happening in the undercurrent is a great sense of satisfaction. And look, even on what you were saying regarding the music industry involvement, I've mentioned that before as well. Like, it's the same thing. You probably don't appreciate when you're sort of in amongst it. Like, I certainly always viewed it as definitely a hobby. Yeah. And upon reflection, then realized that probably learned a lot more than
Oh my goodness. I seriously like accredit working in, like, I played in a 5-piece band and we're all very, obviously very, very different human beings. And being able to build a creative thing with 5 really different people I've learned so much of that, bringing that to games. It's the patience that you learn, everything like that. It's very, there's a lot of similarities, a lot of parallels. So after that, I figured out that you could study games. And I was like, that's pretty cool.
Amazing.
Read the course curriculum. And I was, after that, I became a knowledge vampire for that. I just devoured everything I could. I started researching. I applied and ended up studying at QUT, did a Bachelor of Creative Industries and a Bachelor of Public Relations, because I still wanted to have a backup plan, because it's still one of those things. I'm like, surely this isn't like a thing. I was like, I don't know if I can actually do this. So I'm going to just study it, learn everything I can. And just really, really took part in everything I could at QUT, because it's similar to RMIT here, where it's very much a skill-based university. So they're really teaching you real life skills, university for the real world, as they call it. So they had an internship program as well as an overseas exchange program, which I took part in both of those things, because I was like, if I'm going to be at uni, I'm just going to take advantage of everything they have to offer. So I got a full scholarship to go and study in America for a semester and learn games there, which was incredible. Like, that was another huge opportunity to learn about how games are made from an amazing college in America. I would never be able to afford to go to that college. It was called RPI, Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, up in upstate New York. So they had, in my course, we had a few different game designers, but more specifically, the creator of Donut County was in my class, which is really amazing, because I like have him on Facebook and then saw that he was releasing this game that did really, really well, and I was like, oh my god, we went to the same university. So it was great. So I got to learn about, especially given how American centric games can be, it was really great to learn. And also I knew that I'd be going to America quite a lot for, it was the first time I got to go. So going to America for games, jobs, or whatever I would do with my career. So it was a great opportunity to do that. So I did that in my second year of uni. And then in my final year of uni, I did an internship at a game studio called Defiant Development. They were just about to release Hand of Fate, which was one of their big titles. So I took a 6-month internship with them, learning about production and marketing and social media and everything from their producer there. And that was, once again, another great experience that I just – it was one of those things, even if you can just have something to put on your resume, I was like, even if it was just that, but that team really showed me. It turned out that they were the sister studio of League of Geeks. So they were actually quite good friends, very, very, very good friends. So at the time, I didn't know that, but I didn't realize what a big deal that was to actually go and work with them. So that was a great opportunity from my university. And then from then, obviously, finishing university, the next thing is, do I stay in Brisbane? And that was something I didn't want to do. That was always something I wanted to have an opportunity to leave Brisbane. It's a common trait there. There's probably like half of Melbourne is full of ex-Brisbanites.
People don't really leave Melbourne by the same token. Yeah. Not what I've noticed at least. So,
what is it? The best kind of Australian is a Melbourneer from Brisbane or something like that. I think that's the saying.
more than likely, yeah.
But I knew it was something that I didn't want to stay in Brisbane. It felt very claustrophobic to me and I wanted to get out. So I had two options. So at that time when I graduated, which was end of 2013, was to move to America or Canada. Obviously, that's where a lot of the games industry is. Or locally, Melbourne is where most of the games industry was at the time and still is to some extent. So at that time, it was about 50% of the whole games industry in Australia based in Melbourne. So that seemed like a no-brainer. It seemed a lot easier than going overseas. And it was once again one of those things I'm like, I still had no idea if this was going to be something I could do. So after I finished uni, I had a friend that was living here. So I just drove to Melbourne with another friend. So they were also moving because their partner had just moved here. Another classic Melbourne trope, following people across the country. Yep. So I got in my car, I'd sold everything and just drove to Melbourne in my amazing, amazing Mazda, drove down and slept on a few couches for a week or so. We ended up getting a house, which was great. It was a very stressful time sleeping on couches. And then started basically the hustle, as they say, just like really understanding what the industry was like here. So I ended up working at some local startups and then I was lucky enough to get a first job at League of Geeks, which was very, very serendipitous. But it was one of those things I just really made sure I was understanding the climate of the industry in Melbourne. And so that's basically the long version of moving to Melbourne and figuring out that I wanted to make games. And it was a very wild experience and something that I always wish I'd thought about earlier, but also don't think I would have wanted to do it any differently because I learned so many life skills, which is really important to what I do now.
And look, it seems, I mean, with you remarking on your study, I mean, it seems initially you obviously have a profound fascination with pop culture. And so it sort of manifested into your study. You had interest across, different forms of media and obviously music within there, but the theory, diving into the theory, it seems great. And then all of a sudden, it's that practical element, which you, I guess getting your hands dirty, so to speak, is going to bring the true, really get you just creatively inspired. So it's amazing, definitely. With the journey. But how about the role of mentors within your life? You mentioned a few people who are sort of pushing you or advising you into I guess potential next steps, and obviously now you find yourself acting in sort of a mentorship role for a lot of people that you come across through public engagement activities or within your team and more. So how did you sort of find that process throughout through those formative days and then coming here to Melbourne?
Yeah, definitely. I really mentors is one of those things I didn't think I realized I had mentors until I kind of reflected on them when I was thinking about to where I am today and all that kind of stuff. But when I was at Suncorp in my last 3 years, so when I was at university, so I was working full time while I was at uni, I moved into a technical role. So I actually moved into the technology team and was an executive assistant to one of the managers there. So he ran one of the whole technology teams. So it was like 200 person department. And so I was really shadowing him a lot of the time. And we worked very closely together. So I told him what I wanted to do. He knew that I was studying uni and he knew that I wasn't going to stay at Suncorp. So that was something we established very early on. So he basically said to me, he's like, whatever you want to learn about Agile, about, Agile development, because obviously games still use Agile development or sometimes Agile development, whatever you want to learn about managing teams, about anything to do with leadership, just ask me and just follow me as closely as possible. And I probably wouldn't have paid as much attention if he didn't really like put those two and two together. Even though technology and building insurance software is not the same as building a game. There are so many parallels to it. And I spent those 3 years just learning everything it took to, like, even just to how to be a professional, how to run a meeting, how to make sure someone gets their tasks done, which is inherently what I do now. So that he was so incredibly formative into getting me to the position that I'd be ready to be a producer, because I still didn't even, they don't teach you how to be a producer at university. It's not something that's taught at universities. Mm-hmm. Getting an entry level role as a producer at the time was, and still today is, was very, very rare, a rare opportunity to actually happen. So a lot of the time producers are experts within a specific field and they become a producer. So they may be, you know, an engineer that becomes a producer, or they may be a creative director or something like that. So a lot of the time producers aren't just straight up producers, but so it was really that, learning that was incredibly important. And then obviously moving to Melbourne, I had Tammy. So Tammy was one of those first people that I talked to before I moved here, because I knew she was in the tech scene and I knew she knew everyone, a lot of different people here. And she knew Trent Custers, who's founder of League of Geeks, and she introduced us. That's how we met, was through Tammy. But looking to people like her that knew the scene locally and could really help guide me, because it's so far, moving to a different city is, especially even though it's still in Australia, it's very, learning the ecosystem, learning who to talk to, learning how to talk to people was something that was really, really important for me. So Tammy really helped in that first year of moving here and helping me out. And from there, I've had amazing mentors still to this day in the games industry itself. So I've been very, very fortunate with my journey. I feel like it's still very, like, I feel sometimes a bit funny about telling people what I've done, because I feel like if you try to repeat it, it may not work. it's always, sometimes it's like obviously a lot of hard work, but it's also just like the amount of learning and the amount of finding out the right people to talk to. And those people one day may be not available and you may have missed that opportunity. It's so, like, sometimes it's very serendipitous.
Yeah. I mean, look, circumstance, fate, luck, they would all come into it, but obviously there is a capacity to, continually educate yourself, or pursue opportunities that are obviously just as important. On the mentorship route, I mean, we as a generalization, probably obsessed with, categorizing it a bit much, but in reality, it's not really as formal and not necessarily identified as mentorship. You're just taking the leads from people that can effectively communicate a good course of action, and some people will listen and others won't.
I also have, like, we have traditional mentors actually through League of Geeks. I actually work with a communications mentor, so she's local in Melbourne. Her name's, actually I don't want to say her name because I don't want people to use her too much, because then I won't be able to get a meeting with her. But she, like, honestly, there's different, like, and once again, this is just paying people for their time as well. Like, the whole idea of mentorship is we're still using their time. So I love to be able to make sure it's a professional relationship a lot of that time, so they don't feel like, you know, sometimes it is casual and sometimes it is paid. And she is a paid mentor that I have that's teaches me a lot about how to work with all different types of people, because it's something that is really, really hard. It's sometimes very, very difficult. There's so many different avenues you can go down, which is great.
And I might just hone in on that one a little bit. Was that something you sought out yourself, or were you recommended that based on a need?
That was something that it was something that my boss Trent actually recommended me, because he was seeing her as well, because with our position, so he's the game director and founder, we deal with people like every single day. So it was something that I was really struggling with at the level that I am now. It was like certain personality types that I kind of clashed with, or some, I just couldn't get what I wanted from that person fast enough, or in a way that we weren't annoyed. So it was something that I really was struggling with. And we have at League of Geeks, we have very a really good process in actually making sure that we're advancing our skills. We have a lot of great professional development tracks and all that kind of stuff. So it was something that Trent identified. I was like, I think you should see this person. We're going to pay you for like 2 or 3 sessions. And she is incredible. She was really, really great in helping me figure out, even just learn the theory of different styles of communication. So that was really important.
That's fantastic. Look, I'm going to not continue on with the mentorship route, but maybe veer into a little bit of the role model aspect. I don't want to embarrass you, but you've had some significant, recognition within the industry with, past accolades. I mean, one fairly well-known one was Forbes 30 Under 30 within games in 2017. That's, a great testament to, what you've achieved over the years and respect your peers hold you in. And even recently, you was sort of elevated to the Creative Industries Advisory Group, which is incredible. So Acme CEO Katrina Sedgwick is part of that, musician Adam Briggs, fashion designer Lisa Barron, and more. Tell me about, within this, basically, you're not just, a young upstart coming in from Brisbane into, the big smoke and finding you're now you're out there, you're quite recognised for your work with League of Geeks and Girl Geek Academy. You're an active contributor to the ecosystem, largely involved in a number of engagement activities. Mm-hmm. So how has it felt to be at that level where people are, as it happens, probably pinging you for a number of things as well to pick your brain, so to speak?
It can be very strange. Like being able to be on a table with Briggs is like one of those things. I was like, oh my God, this is so cool. it comes with obviously a lot of responsibility and a lot of remembering that this, what I do and what I say sometimes, obviously people sometimes will look up to there is a great weight to what I can do within my industry. But I think a lot of it has come from the fact that I love this industry, and I have had a very, very great opportunities given to me, and I want to make sure that the industry is something that I can be in for the rest of my life. And as it stands, it has been moving, and it's been moving into great direction since the old school AAA hardcore, crunch days of games. People are kind of reflecting a little bit more on how we can make games more sustainably. But I want it to be a place that, especially in Australia, I think we have a great opportunity to be like not only a technology hub, but a game making hub in Australia, because we have amazing talent. We have, a beautiful country to live in and everything. So I think the reason why I do what I do and why I get so excited about being able to represent my industry is because I just want to see more people making games, and I want to be able to see this industry be taken seriously, but also be treated with a lot of respect, like the people that make the game, with a lot of respect. And I think we still have a long ways to go with that. So that's why I do all this stuff. It's not just because I like having my photo taken, because sometimes I don't. But it's because I also hope there's people that will figure out they want to make games earlier than I did as well, or figure out, they want to pivot, because it's not just about, young people making games. I like seeing people that are like much older in the industry and deciding they want to make games too, because games, another thing with games similar to like startup scenes, it's a very young industry. It's a lot of young people making it, which is not necessarily gathering all different types of backstories and lives and experiences into making the creative thing. So
yeah,
weird. It's definitely strange, but yeah.
I mean, obviously, there's many, many parallels between what you do with, with League of Geeks, and then also with Girl Geek Academy.
Yeah.
Within Girl Geek Academy, you're championing diversity in many, many sort of ways and spectrums. So I think that it's incredible that you also you're carrying that into, your want for the industry. But for those who don't actually, understand what the video game industry is like within Melbourne or Australia, mm-hmm. you mentioned some statistics just before. Did you want to sort of let people know now mm-hmm. Regarding what the indie game scene is like, what's on our doorstep? You work from a video game co-working space. So can you paint a bit of a picture about what's happening in this country and Melbourne?
Yeah, definitely. So I love talking about the Australian game scene. It's super, super interesting. So we have, we work at a place called The Arcade, as you just mentioned. So there's about 100 different game development studios. So they can be anywhere from like a one person team to we're 35 people now working in our studio. So a bunch of different people that work out of a big co-working space in South Melbourne. And that was formed, I don't even know how many years ago now, but it's moved twice now or once now. now since I've been there, and it's a way of being able to, like most co-working spaces, cross-pollinate a lot of different types of industries and businesses, so we can actually work together and help solve problems. There's lots of different events that get run there on lunchtimes or after work, which is like unreal. Often run a lot of events there. Girl Geek has run many, many events there, and it means that we can have access to the indie scene pretty much straight away. But broadly speaking, more in Melbourne and in Victoria and also New South Wales and other states, the industry has definitely changed in Australia over the years. Back before my time in the industry, the Australian games industry was basically known for big AAA style studios. So AAA being like the blockbuster of the games world. So we had a lot of big studios in Australia that were either like spin-offs of, or like other studios of the like big American studios had their own head offices here in Australia, because pre-GFC, Australians were really, really affordable to hire. So you'd see a lot of big games being made here. Unfortunately, after the GFC, when I was in university, a lot of those studios closed down. So we saw what they call the big brain drain of the GFC. So people were out of jobs. And they either did one of three things. They would move overseas to get a job at the head office where they're working at. They would stay here and open up another studio. So we saw a few little indies pop up. Or they would just leave the industry altogether. So we saw a lot of senior talent leave the industry. And over the last 5 years, basically what we've been seeing is like a resurgence of the indie. So because we've got things like, so Film Victoria is a local government board that actually gives great funding to smaller teams. There are ones in New South Wales and Queensland as well. But what we're seeing is a resurgence of the smaller studios reforming from that era. And the Phoenix is rising at that point where we have bigger studios like ourselves. We have Sledgehammer Games, which is just opened in Victoria probably about a year ago now. So they're an offshoot of Activision, and they're hiring like something like 100 people over the next year working on Call of Duty. So we're seeing a revitalization of our studios here in Australia, because also we have people still wanting to make games. There's still been people making games after hours. There've still been people making games through university. So we've been seeing a lot of like one-off studios. There were things like Crossy Road that blew up a couple of years ago, five years ago now. And that was based off, you know, a couple of people that had been making games in the industry for a little while, but didn't have that big success. There's a lot of these great little nuggets of success throughout the industry in Victoria, and because we have great funding, we've been able to actually start to grow that, and places like the Arcade as well. More importantly, above all and beyond this, we have a thing called Melbourne International Games Week, which is once again another Creative Vic, Film Vic funded initiative, where we have PAX Australia, which PAX is a big consumer games conference. It's the only version of it outside of America. So they have heaps of them in the US. They have three in the US and one here in Australia. And it was something that Creative Victoria petitioned for a little while ago. And having that means there's a huge week of celebration of game developers, consumers alike. And there's an appetite for it here in Australia. And there's lots of great people making it as well, which is super exciting.
Yeah, PAX was absolutely incredible first time I attended it. And really, look, it opened my eyes up a lot, particularly to the thriving indie game scene. There was nothing quite – I think I just basically had a moment where I walked through the show floor, and it is incredible, but absolutely there is so much going on. I've never had so much stimulus. I came out absolutely exhausted, but in a great way, because I am a game fan myself and have been partial to it over the years. But what one thing that I loved just a moment was when I was walking the floor with the indie games and then seeing all the people, the actual developers displaying them, but then having sort of made in Victoria, you know, badges like displayed, like sort of, and that sort of just gave me a really good insight into, oh, well, this is all sort of on the doorstep. I'm more curious now, like about what's actually going on.
Yeah.
And one further aside to that is, you know, also on the A Lot to Say podcast, chatted with Tim Scheel, who's, you know, founder of Spirit Level and, you know, been a global touring musician. But his start in developing video game music for Commobius with Duet and the Gardens Between with the Vauxhall agents, both based in Melbourne, was just pinging through his Facebook, just putting a call out, just saying, I'm sort of interested in getting involved in video game music. Anyone know how I would do that? And then all of a sudden, it's just been this gestating thing, which culminated in meeting the people at PAX.
Yeah.
So I've just put a statement rather than a question. But I guess for people who are interested in potentially getting into the video game world in terms of pursuing that as a career, but with some diverse skill sets, what would be your recommendations for how to know where to look and how to harness their skills?
Yeah, definitely. I think one thing, funnily enough, it is a Valve, I think it's a Valve term. So Valve Studios in Seattle, they have a handbook that they, an employee handbook, and it's something that we've kind of taken a little bit from, but they have this idea of T-shaped people. I think they use it in tech as well. So T-shaped people are people that we look for a lot of time. So people with a deep specialization in a particular subject matter, but then have a broad amount of other skill sets along with it. Especially in Melbourne and Australia, when we're talking about indie means independent, which generally means that you don't have access to a huge amount of funds. It does mean that you're a startup style studio. It means that you also have what they call like the indie spirit as well. So you're making games that are for you generally, not for a big publisher or a bigger cause. So a lot of the time with these studios, we aren't looking for just someone that can just do one particular thing. So that's definitely something to think about. Generally speaking, if you are looking to get into games, there are a few different avenues. You don't necessarily need to go to university to get into games. We do have our founder of League of Geeks, Trent Custers, did not go to university. And it's one of those things that we keep forgetting. And we're like, we just assume that he did because for some reason people assume success with going to university, which is very important still for some people, but he didn't. So there's definitely ways to do it. But the thing with universities, it does teach you a few things that we look for. So for example, it gives you the ability to figure out how to ship things or finish things, as we call them, shipping in games. So finishing projects, figuring out how to work with other people. Even university can be the hardest time. I give people a lot of credit for working with university projects, as I also understand how hard that can be. But we're looking for what projects you've worked on. So if you haven't gone to university, have you made your own game? Has there been something that you've worked on? If you're not necessarily an engineer, have you got a great portfolio online that's like an art portfolio? Or have you collaborated with someone where they've put your art assets into the game? So we're looking for a myriad of different skills. So it depends on obviously what kind of job you're looking for. But like I was saying as well, it's also about knowing the industry. So if you're sending out emails or looking to actually apply for jobs, understanding what these companies are and who they are. We're not, most of the companies in Australia aren't these big monolith organizations. If you're going to email someone, you'll just get someone like me answering the email. So we want to know why you want to come work with us. We want to know about your background and about why you want to make games. Anyone can apply for a job. Making yourself stand out is obviously going to be a really important thing to do. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people coming through university, but not that many jobs. So that is a big problem with the industry. But on the flip side, you do have an opportunity to make your own careers and make your own jobs as well. So we're seeing a lot of great people make games and have huge successes from that. So that is definitely an avenue you can also go down. But it is obviously tough. So it's a lot harder to do that route. But we've definitely seen success. Another great thing I think that people can take part of, similar to hackathons, are a thing called game jams. Yep. So game jams, huge, huge fan of these if they're done in a responsible and healthy manner. But there is one called Global Game Jam that's held every year in January. There are a lot of game jams like Ludo Jam that are held online. So it basically gives you a theme or some kind of topic and you get together with friends or just do it on your own and make a game over 48 hours. And what that means is that when you do a game jam is you have to really, really think about, similar to hackathons, what's the loop? What's the core thing that you're going to focus on to show a really, really small part of the game and that you can actually bring these elements together and figure it out to release something? It doesn't need to be perfect, but getting to that point that the end, after 2 days or 3 days, you've figured out how to make the thing jump and make the thing go and make someone laugh, I think that's really, really a really, really great skill to have. There's also so many resources online. Honestly, if you search like game development, like things like there's Gama Sutra, so it's a big industry website. GDC, Game Developers Conference, has a YouTube channel with so many free talks available. A big thing of it is like just learning about the industry and the context of what you want to get into, because it is, there's a lot available and people love talking about what they make. So another thing is Twitter. Twitter is like where I kind of started as well. It's where there are lots of different game developers talking about the industry. It's where I went to when I was trying to figure out who to network with. It's like who are the people in the industry that I should know or should be involved with or reach out to. And Twitter and Facebook were those big places that really helped me figure out and navigate the industry.
I've long heard too many people remark, you know, it's too difficult to get involved in, let's just call it Twitter. With the presumption that, I guess, basically that they need to gather an audience, when in reality, you can just use it as, you know, the greatest information gathering resource. Yeah. Yes, you need a healthy regard for bias and everything. And also there's a genuine fear of going down the rabbit hole, but you do, you will definitely find out what you need to know just by getting curious and investigating. Oh,
definitely.
I want to talk about one thing as we get towards the end, and I'll circle back on just a couple of things you mentioned, but there's one thing which is around, you learned within university about, I guess, some fundamental skills in shipping, as you term it in sort of game development world, but shipping or I guess the development cycle has had some, I guess, like in a games development context, has had some reported instances of, I guess, what you call crunch or sort of bad models of development, which is harmful for employees or team morale.
Yes.
Do you want to talk a bit about not so much what that is, but how the industry is moving beyond that now?
Yes, I'd love to talk about that. I'm very, very passionate about this because it is... there is a great research project. Once again, YouTube, great resource. There is a YouTube video on the GDC vault on YouTube by, it's an organization. It's called the Games Outcome Project. It was run by a university in the US. And basically they were like, okay, let's take a look at the correlation between studios and games that have crunch and their Metacritic score and sales. Amazing fact, they do not relate, and they do, crunching and making your staff work long hours does not make a better game. Obviously, there are outliers, and there's this interesting culmination and thought behind this stuff around, would games like Red Dead Redemption and GTA exist if their staff didn't basically give their whole entire life to that project? And the answer is probably no. But there is something to be said about also there are these like games and that are absolute masterpieces and are culturally going to be remembered for probably the rest of games history. But on the flip side, there is, you know, there is a loss there. There is a human loss in the fact that people have lost probably years of their lives to making this thing. So there's definitely, it's a really, really tough subject. But there are ways to make sure that studios aren't doing it. It's something that we really, 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 really make sure we take into consideration with League of Geeks, because we're building a big project. We have a lot of people and we want people to be sustainable. Like, we want their careers to be sustainable. It's something that I always think about is I don't want to be here in 10 years and be just completely, there's no point in me making things if I've completely shut down and burnt out as a person. I want to be making games and being doing it with joy and fun for the rest of my life. So figuring out ways to do that. There's lots of different studies into it and lots of thoughts that we've taken to look into it. It's just about, for us, it's been about research and asking our peers and figuring out. It's we haven't solved it yet. We have been very fortunate that we've had very little overtime at all at our studio and our history of our studio. But it is something that we're constantly keeping an eye on. And that's something I think that's where people get themselves in trouble, is when they're not keeping an eye on it. It's like trying to put sand in your catch sand in your hand, right? Like, if you don't keep an eye on it, it will fall out. So it is something that is incredibly, incredibly difficult to manage. But it is something that you need to be thinking about. It's like a lot of those big subjects, right? Like diversity and inclusion. It's like, it's so easy to be like, it'll sort itself out, but it won't sort itself out. It's one of those things, because games, at the end of the day, they come in at the angle of technology and creativity. And when you bring those two together, like latest technology and latest creativity, it is something you're basically making new things all the time, and you're working towards something. For example, we're working on stuff for the next generation of consoles. A lot of people are. We still haven't seen these consoles yet. So we're making a lot of assumptions around what we're doing and everything. And you're constantly doing these things and guessing, and but also having to be creatively satisfying for the audience as well.
Yeah.
So it's incredibly hard, but you have to also remember that we're just people are making these things. And I think that's an important thing for – it's a hard thing as well, because there's gamers as well. It's something that I don't really touch a lot of the time in what I do, but gamers are on the whole other end of the spectrum, is they have so many expectations all of the time about what we do. And that's why you see this vicious cycle of studios being like, okay, we just got to get this thing out. We got to release it. Like Fortnite, as an example, is like, you know, they're this monolithic game now that's got this hungry, hungry beast of players that constantly want new content. And it's so incredibly hard to keep that up. So yeah, it's a really, really hard subject, but there are so many great things out there and tools out there right now. And people are doing a lot of things. There are a lot of great studios that are making strides in this way, as well as League of Geeks, that it can be done, but it is hard. You have to do the work.
Well, the determining the inherent culture within the studio, right? And I guess the manner in which we create.
Yeah, correct.
I think just... obviously, to be cognizant of it is the beginning, and hopefully we see it just become just this innate, way of being. But
yeah.
I think on that developing thing, I mean, with League of Geeks, I mean, you released Armello in 2015. It's a digital role-playing strategy board game. You initially had a Kickstarter campaign, and that's developed over time. So what's on the radar for... say for League of Geeks, where do you go to in the future? I imagine you'd have developing projects, not all of which you could actually talk about. But we are, for those that may not even be aware of it, we're on the precipice of next generation consoles. Yeah. New leaps in technology and user experience. So, what does the upcoming short term future look like for League of Geeks and I guess the industry as a whole?
Yeah, so we're definitely. So what we did with Armello is, as soon as it released, we didn't really know about a thing called games as a service, which is similar to what I was saying with Fortnite, is that you release a game and then you keep supporting it, similar to software as a service. There are updates and content and new DLC and all that kind of stuff. So we did that on Armello for many years. So we actually released it and realized it could fit this model and had to kind of pivot and change a little bit of our strategy to work with this model. It was a very big learning curve very early on. So the new project that we're working on, which, yes, we have not announced, but it's very, very exciting. We have taken a lot of those learnings that we've had with Armello and thinking about ways that we can do it right from day one. So we are working on very exciting new projects. We are scaling at the moment, to use the startup term there. Mm-hmm. So we're 33 and we're hiring 10 people over the next 7 months, which is really, really exciting. So we're really basically figuring out, and we're in a process, in a stage of development called pre-production. So pre-production is really figuring out what the game is, as well as figuring out how we're going to make the game. So with video games, there's a lot of pipelines that you have to figure out, because we're using newer technology than Armello. We're also figuring out, like, you can't just reuse stuff that you made on another game. You actually have to start it all again effectively. So we're basically figuring out all those pipelines, figuring out how we want to make the game. And that's why that discussion on Crunch is very front of my mind at the moment, because we're figuring out how we can plan and scope the project as sustainably as possible.
Yeah.
So we're working on that at the moment, which is really, really exciting. We'll be having some big announcements this year, which will be awesome. But at the moment, we're just basically just heads down figuring out this new game, which is a really, really exciting time to be at. And we're also at one of those stages in our company that we just have more new people than what we started off with. Like, I started as like the 10th employee, I think. So we've got now more new people than all the people, which is really interesting. But we've got such a, like, our recruitment process is something that we've figured out really early on as something that's really important to us. So we've got an amazing, awesome, exciting team. So that's what we're working on at the moment, which is really, really cool. Like, very, very exciting. but I just wish I could talk. I can't wait till I can talk about it. It's going to be very exciting.
No, it's okay. We'll get to it. I mean, we'll happily promote it out. I can't wait to see what eventuates. But it just like you mentioned, there are, yes, it is difficult careers-wise in terms of, yes, it can be somewhat limited in how many jobs there are out there, but you have mentioned you've got 9 or 10 jobs on the go at the moment, so that's pretty remarkable.
And also we're at the point that we're actually hiring like non-typical jobs as well. We're actually hiring like an IT person, like not a games person specifically, it's someone that can help us support our IT infrastructure. So you don't need to be a game developer to have that particular role. We hired a studio manager recently as well, which is like a non-game specific job. So when you get to our stage of our studio, you start seeing jobs that come up too that are kind of like, oh, wow, I didn't think about the fact that a studio would need that kind of person. But we're also, you know, a group of people at the end of the day. We need someone to help us with all the other admin bits and pieces behind the scene to support us, which is really cool.
Yeah. COVID-19 be damned. Just keep bringing them in.
It's actually making my life very, very difficult. Creative projects remotely is very difficult.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, look, we've touched on, I guess, you know, a large part of the journey. If you don't mind me asking, you mentioned about music industry. I mean, you sure do know how to pick the industries to be involved in. It's some niche skill sets at large. But what was your sort of background and, preferred genre and what the world you operated in, I should say?
Also, as a side note to that, do you know Bennett Foddy, the game developer? He made Getting Over It with Bennett Foddy.
Yeah.
He was in Cut Copy.
You're joking.
Know. Yeah.
I did not know that at all.
Yeah, that's it. When you're talking about Tim Shiel before, I was like, I wonder if he knows that Bennett Foddy was in Cut Copy. Yeah, I didn't know that for ages. And then for some reason, we were doing some research on him. And I was like, oh my God, he was in Cut Copy? What the hell? Yeah. There's someone else. The Art of Fighting, one of the guys from Art of Fighting was also founded the studio. Anyway, yeah. Yeah.
Well, ping Bennett and just tell him to keep on the radar because I'll ping him soon. But,
no. I played in sad indie like rock bands. I played electric violin and guitar, and like I was really into bands like Australian bands like Charge Group and like Talk and all these really weird kind of like rhythmic indie bands. So played a lot of like. Also, we had a really great punk drummer. He played in a band called To the North, which were like big in Brisbane back in the day. But we played, it was a really weird mix of like indie, sad music. It was great. It was so awesome. I loved it. But it was just drove my anxiety up the wall. I think it made me more, I've never been more stressed out of like writing an album or recording an album. It's definitely a very different vibe. It's very stressful. I liken it to having to sit in front of a mirror and look at your face for 5 days straight. Like you're just having to look at every imperfection of what you've done wrong for 5 days. It was awful. I loved it, but it was awful.
Yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
Look, thank you so much for illustrating that. I mean, I ask about the music industry part because, I've met many people that have been involved in the music industry over time. I've seen them do a lot with not much, and I just wonder about how they would do within, whether we're talking tech companies or running, tech engagement events or whatever. And I just know they'd be incredible at it because I've seen.
Yeah, definitely. You're totally right.
But music industry, by the same token, always has its own issues to sort out. So that's a chat for another day. But look. I really want to thank you for joining in the chat today. I've long sort of wanted to know a little bit more about your background, but always admired what yourself and the gang at Girl Geek Academy have been producing. One important thing to touch on, you are starting to get involved in drones, fly aviation space. So you've been getting involved in that in the near future.
Yeah, that was something that Sarah's really, really great, our CEO. She's really great at like we work with Catherine Ball for a while now. Like she's been part of the Girl Geek family for quite a while. And so that's something that Sarah really headed up and it makes sense. It's all part of the geek, you know, the geek area. Yeah. So we're always looking at things that my next thing is I'm trying to get Sarah to educate me more in Bitcoin. So there's all these different things. That's like, and another thing that we've been looking into as well is like electric vehicles. Like that's another part of like the future of tech is sustainability. So there's all these different things that we'd like to add to our collection, because it's not just like STEM and geekiness is not just about programming. There's so many different elements to it, there's so many different things to navigate. And I'm sure there's so many people that would love to be in, like, understand drones and flying, but being like, oh no, it seems really hard, or it like seems really confusing, or I don't really know. And if it was taught in a way or educated in a way that you could understand, I'm sure people would get into it very, very easily.
That's right. And, you know, we need to engage young people and get them really interested and help build it. And by the same token, you know, there'd be plenty of, say, research academics that, you know, can apply their longstanding knowledge into, you know, into these new ways rather than, you know, sinking into a back corner, you know, just not engaging anymore. So we want to see them come out and really get involved and give a shit, basically.
Perfect. I love that. Yeah.
Just thought of it on the fly. We'll see whether I edit it out. But anyway, Lizzie, thank you so much once again. So, look, one last thing I'd love to love a recommendation from you on a group or a game that's on your sort of radar, not part of League of Geeks, one that you can actually out there in industry or maybe local.
Oh, that's a very good one. I'm just trying to think. I'm going to have to... Oh my God.
I put you on the spot, so it's okay. But,
well, I think the biggest one, obviously, the easiest probably one to get into, and I'm sure everyone's heard of this game, but I don't know if you know it was made in Melbourne, but Untitled Goose Game came out towards the end of last year, and they're actually good friends of ours, and they were all very unconventional. If you want to talk to someone else that has unconventional careers, they definitely are that. They're a group of like arts like academics essentially, and one mathematician. Like none of them, we actually, when we started working with them, we were helping them basically figure out how to build a game in Unity specifically. So that's a game that's an incredible story as well as incredibly accessible and awesome to play. Not that they need any more publicity, because they have definitely done amazing, amazing things. But I feel like I actually, in regards to into new games, I'm just tired.
Yeah, no, I get it. Look, for me, but I really like what Summerfall Studios did in, you know, like crowdfunding Chorus. So I'm excited to see how that eventuates.
Oh, yes, yes.
Untitled Goose Game. I thought one of the coolest things of the start of COVID-19 was when they ran a panel discussion in Animal Crossing.
Oh, just incredible.
Amazing. Incredible. Very right on brand for the, if you were going to take it as some humor. But I think... it's just from my perspective, looking in, but, you know, being a fan in general, it's just a really exciting scene. And obviously we can't gather in person as much at the moment, but that time will come soon. And I'm excited to see what eventuates in the coming years.
Yes, it's exciting. People are still making great things. Lucky. And also there are games, like you said, like Animal Crossing, people are still gathering, but they're just gathering in very unique ways now, which is really, really awesome to see. And I think games are being a great comfort, I think, for a lot of people at the moment, which is really, really awesome.
For sure. Look, I want to thank you once again. I've done the thank you, multiple thank yous across the board. But as we've mentioned a little bit today, do check out a lot of what Lizzie's produced, and do check out League of Geeks, in particular Armello, and some upcoming announcements. In reference to Girl Geek Academy, if it sparked interest for people to get involved in the forums, then I think that's forums.girlgeekacademy.com. There's a number of jobs going at League of Geeks, so you can find that on the career section on the website. And with that, if you want to learn a bit more from Lizzie Kane, check her out on Twitter at LISYK, Lizzie K.
That's me.
On that, Lizzie, thanks heaps.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. That was fun.
I appreciate it. We'll chat again soon.
Thank you.
So that was my chat with Lizzie Kane as part of A Lot to Say. You can find Lizzie on the social medias at Lizzie K, as well as League of Geeks at League of Geeks, and Girl Geek Academy at Girl Geek Academy. Nice one. I've been your host, Gary Williams. So the music on this podcast is by my band Bateman, programmed by our drummer, Gareth Leach, who's actually full on country music guy now. Follow A Lot To Say on the Olds Project social media channels at Olds Projects. Cheers. Thanks so much for tuning in.